afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to the Craig BioCraft Labs Shareholder Conference Call. All lines have been placed on listen-only mode. Your speakers today will be Mr. Kim Thompson, CEO, and Mr. Ben Hansel. Without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to Mr. Hansel.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. This is Ben Hansel, and I'd like to start by allowing Kim Thompson to make his opening statement. From there, we're going to go to a question-and-answer phase of the call, and that will be followed up by Kim's closing statement. Kim?
Thank you, Ben. Ben, I'll rely on you to let me know if there's any problems with sound quality, just so don't hesitate to interrupt me and give me a sound check if you need to do that.
Absolutely.
Welcome, Craig shareholders. It's actually an honor and a privilege to be speaking with you again. I'm sure most of you are very familiar with the breakthrough that the company announced back in September, and probably most of you have been following our progress very closely since then. I'll be happy to answer any questions if they've been submitted to Ben regarding the technology breakthrough, which we announced this last fall, and the creation of the first successful transgenic silkworm spinning recombinant silk fibers. But since then, there have been two more very significant developments that I want to talk to you about, and then also give you a general overview of where we're at, how we're moving, a little bit about the strategy, and I think some of that will come out, too, in some of the specific questions that many of you have submitted to Ben for this conference call. And one of the most significant events that's taken place since September is our agreement with biotechnology giant Sigma Aldrich. We announced that on April 8th, as I'm sure many or most of you are very well aware. Sigma is a powerhouse in the biotechnology world, a multi-billion-dollar company. What was important for us regarding Sigma, though, was a revolutionary technology which they have, the zinc finger technology, which is a very powerful genetic engineering technology which we knew had the potential to greatly accelerate our research and development of new products. It took us 6 months to negotiate a deal with Sigma where we could obtain a licensing right to use this technology on silkworm to potentially produce new transgenic materials, including spider silk-based based materials, and we were able to successfully announce that on April 8th. Sigma sent a scientist into the lab at Notre Dame to review our technology before the deal was signed, that was the first time that Craig had really allowed an outside scientist from a biotechnology company to come in and take a look at what we were doing. But we gave them full disclosure so that they could see what we were doing. And I'm happy to announce to you today that earlier today we received our first delivery of zinc fingers from Sigma. We received two separate zinc finger configurations today in the laboratory, and we're going to be putting them to immediate use. I talked with Dr. Malcolm Fraser earlier today, and he told me that the plan is for us to begin our first round of microinjections using the zinc finger technology this coming week. So this will happen very quickly. It took us 6 months to negotiate the deal, but it'll take us less than 7 days to actually implement the machinery and put it into use. We have very high expectations for these zinc fingers, which perhaps we can talk about a little later in the conference call. But if all goes well with the microinjections, which we're planning to do next week, then by fall we may be in a position to announce on some additional breakthroughs. The second major event that I wanted to highlight was our announcement last week of the creation of the first commercial hybrid. And essentially, what we did was our scientists mated our very best transgenic with a large commercial grade silkworm. with the result being a large commercial-grade silkworm producing our recombinant silk fibers. And this is going to be the production platform for our Generation 1 technology. And I'm very excited about this and that this puts us ahead of where we thought we would be in terms of commercial ramp-up is a bit of an understatement. Some other developments that I want to talk to you about, too. We have been in discussions about moving into a private laboratory. And I can tell you that we are right now in negotiations on some leasing some beautiful laboratory space for Craig Biocraft Laboratories. As many of you know, up until now, we've been operating all of our scientific processes inside universities, primarily inside the University of Notre Dame. And I'm directly leasing private lab space would be a significant expansion of our laboratory operations. It's something that we're very excited about, and we're in negotiations right now on some beautiful space. And finally, I want to recap with you a little bit about what's going on in terms of the research and development pipeline and very briefly commercialization, although I understand from Ben that he's got some specific questions on commercialization that he wants me to address, so I'll try to be very brief. First of all, the material that we announced, the breakthrough on transgenic silkworms, which we produced back in September, we're calling Generation 1 material. This is, as many of you know, a recombinant spider silk material, which is essentially a fusion of silkworm silk and spider silk. The silkworms have been genetically engineered using the piggyback technology with spider silk DNA, and the result is has been the creation of approximately 20 different strains of silkworm producing different recombinant silk fibers, which are a fusion of natural silk, natural silkworm silk, and spider silk. One of these in particular showed significant improvements over silkworm silk in both strength and elasticity and in other properties as well, including fineness and sheen and smoothness. That strain of silkworm, that transgenic silkworm, has been labeled the monster silk. And the commercial hybrid, which we recently announced, was a mating of a monster silk caterpillar with a commercial strain caterpillar. The product of that offspring is, in the nomenclature that I use, still Generation 1. It's still producing that same or similar, very similar, fusion silk product. It's stronger than commercial silk. It's more flexible than commercial silk. That's our Generation 1 material, and that's what we're ramping up for commercialization right now. And we'll talk about what we're doing on that ramp-up a little later in the call. But research and development at Craig has not slowed down. It's actually accelerated. And I'm greatly accelerated as of today with the arrival of the first two zinc fingers. And those are being aimed at production of three new technologies, a technology which we're calling Generation 2. Once we complete Generation 2, or in the latter stages of Generation 2, we're going to move on to Generation 3. And there's a third technology, a platform technology, which we are also developing using the zinc finger technology. So a brief description. We're moving right now towards immediately into the development of the Generation 2 technologies and this new platform technology. our target for Generation 2 is to essentially duplicate on the spider silk produced by the orb weave spider. As many of you already know, this is an incredibly resilient and strong and flexible material that has been essentially the holy grail of material science for quite some time. The zinc finger technology, we believe, is the key to unlocking this potential, and we would anticipate that we should be able to achieve a laboratory production of the Generation 2 technology in the latter part of 2011 or the early part of 2012. At the same time, we're applying zinc finger technology to the creation of a new platform, which I am not at liberty to describe much further than that. But our expectation is that this new platform could be ready in the laboratory later in 2011. So I would say we are very excited about R&D and the pace of R&D. And as we talk about the zinc fingers a little bit in a little more detail here, I think you'll see why we have good reason to believe that R&D is going to go at a much faster pace than it has already this last year. And then finally, Generation 3, just a very brief description of what we have planned for Generation 3. That's a technology that will definitely not come out until, at the earliest, probably the middle or latter part of 2012. And that is two things. Customizable fibers, where a client could come to Craig Labs and say, we're looking for a material with, you know, strength properties of X and flexibility properties of Y. You know, can you create that for us? And with this Generation 3 technology, we should be able to basically dial in within reasonable ranges whatever flexibility or strength properties a client desires. And another aspect of this technology will be the ability to impart unique properties to the fibers. And just as a way of illustration, we may be able to embed antibiotic properties into Generation 3 fibers or embed foreign materials into the fibers, which give them extraordinary properties of strength and resiliency, which simply do not occur in nature. So this is pretty exciting. The Generation 1 technology that we have already developed is targeted for the roughly $3 billion a year on silk markets and textile markets, and we think that that product essentially is ready right now to make significant inroads into those markets. And the Generation 2 and 3 products are being designed to compete in the technical textiles market, which is something in excess of $100 billion a year market. So without much further ado, Ben, why don't I open it up to you, and you can give me some of the questions that shareholders have sent in to you.
Great. Kim, the first question is, was the Sigma-Aldrich agreement born out of necessity, or was it strictly to accelerate the commercialization process?
That's a complex question. It wasn't born out of necessity. We have certainly been able to make huge strides with piggyback technology our spider silk technology without the use of zinc fingers. So I wouldn't say it was born out of necessity. But it was a very clever move, and it was a smart move on the part of Craig Labs and, frankly, I think on the part of Sigma as well. This technology does a number of things for us that could not have been done otherwise. And I'll hopefully explain that in a little more detail later in the call. But in short, what it allows us to do is to rapidly increase the productivity of our research and development program so that we can foresee the potential here to produce more transgenics and not only faster and in a streamlined process, but with unique properties that wouldn't have been available on in the past. But another big impetus for this was on competition and our concern about competition. With the announcement in September of 2010, we felt we were, frankly, head and shoulders above any potential competitor who wanted to get involved in these markets. We believe that this technology is very lucrative. The transgenic silkworm is potentially very lucrative, and we knew that there were other labs around the world that were, you know, interested in this technology. When there's big money at stake, it attracts competition. There's no way around that. And although we felt we were way ahead of the game, we wanted not to slow down our pace around the track. We wanted to accelerate our pace around the track. We wanted that vehicle moving so fast that other potential competitors would essentially say, "Oh, gee, there's no point. There's no point in even trying. Let's give up. They're three laps ahead now. If we're dead set on this, on doing this, let's call them up and talk with them and see if we can work cooperatively." That was the real major impetus for us in doing the deal with Sigma. Not just to accelerate our research and development, because that's what we do, but to get that car moving around the track so fast that we would essentially create almost a sense of hopelessness among potential competitors. And frankly, not because we're mean guys. Scientists working in the lab at Notre Dame, no scientists at other labs around the world. These are good people. We're not doing this in any mean way, and we're very open to collaborating and working with other people. But once we took the lead, we wanted to leverage that into accelerating our lead, and I believe we've achieved that.
Are the desired modified genes or characteristics transferred to the offspring worms?
Yes, and that's true both with the piggyback technology that we've been using and with the new zinc finger technology. The transgenic silkworms pass those traits on to their offspring. As any geneticists that are listening in the call will know that there's a certain Mendelian inheritance chart that you can follow for essentially achieving homozygosity within a few generations. But without getting too technical, the short answer is yes. The offspring carry the same traits as the parents.
Great. Will the zinc fingers improve the silk quality, as in the look, feel, or mechanical properties?
Good question. The zinc fingers are essentially an engineering tool. By themselves, they really don't do much at all to silkworm or to anything else. They are a very powerful engineering tool. But with this tool, yes, we absolutely believe that we can improve silk quality, look, feel, mechanical properties, elasticity, strength, color, impact on organisms, for example, antibiotics. The potential is almost unlimited in terms of using zinc fingers as a platform technology to changing the silkworm. As a real brief illustration, what we've been doing up until now in terms of genetically engineering silkworm has been almost like setting up a dartboard on a barn and standing back 200 yards and then throwing the darts as hard as we can in hopes that they'll reach the dartboard. Now, you might have to throw 10,000 darts before you get one to hit in the dartboard, kind of close to where you were hoping to hit. You're never going to maybe hit exactly where you want, but you throw enough darts at that board from that range, you can maybe get close. And frankly, you could in some ways describe the Generation 1 technology in that regard. But we didn't just throw a lot of darts. We threw them in a very smart way. With the zinc finger technology, it's entirely different. It's essentially like being able to walk up to the barn and push the first dart in where you want it, and the second dart in where you want it, and the third dart and the fourth dart. It's much more akin to going into a document in Microsoft Word and going in and editing it and saying, I'll delete this period and change it to a question mark, and I'll delete this word that, and I'll change it to which. With other genetic engineering technologies, that simply is not possible. It's just a science fiction fantasy. But Sigma's zinc finger technology has made this particular science fiction fantasy a reality. It's a beautiful and elegant technology. I really can't say enough good about it. And with the ability to do this kind of editing of the silkworm genome in regard to use of spider silk DNA and spider silk analogs, the potential is just tremendous in terms of being able to accelerate our R&D. You can imagine, you know, how thrilled our scientists are instead of having to throw hundreds and thousands of darts, you know, DNA sequences, to be able to do this in just, you know, one or a few attempts is, it's really going to be, we believe, a huge boon to our research and development effort, and it's going to really accelerate the growth and development of new products in Craig Labs over the next, you know, 24 months, we believe.
Okay. Is the monster hybrid from a particular type of silkworm?
Yes. It's the product of mating our very best laboratory transgenic with a much larger commercial strain of silkworm. And that new hybrid, he's fatter, he's plumper, and he spins a bigger cocoon. And I mean, you can see it. And frankly, when our scientists first saw it, they said, "Oh, we got it." You know, the cocoon, they could tell from the color. The color is a slight shade of green, which means because of the tagging that they've done with these genetic traits. That green cocoon essentially means it's carrying the transgenic traits. It's producing a recombinant cocoon that's composed of a combination of silkworm silk and spider silk. And so they had a pretty good idea of what they had. But for the announcement, we had to wait for actual independent laboratory confirmation. We tested the material in-house and determined it was, you know, what we hoped it would be. And then our scientists also sent cocoons overseas to a laboratory which conducted a blind study. And this is a lab that specializes in grading commercial silk. And they confirmed exactly what our internal tests showed, that this silk indeed was stronger and more flexible than the original, you know, commercial silkworm.
Okay, this next question is actually multiple questions in one question. The beginning being in regards to the elasticity and strength, how does the monster hybrid silk compare to the original transgenic silkworm silk? And if there is a noticeable difference, will the zinc finger, I'm kind of just because of some of the things I've learned on this call already, changing the question just a little bit from the original submitted question. But if there is a noticeable difference, will you be incorporating the zinc finger technology to improve on those differences?
Okay, so there is a difference in the silk produced by the monster hybrid and the silk produced by the original transgenic. Our scientists are telling us that difference is about a 10% difference in terms of properties of strength and elasticity, and that the Monster hybrid is still, you know, significantly stronger and more flexible than what is available now for commercial silk. Will we be incorporating the zinc finger technology to improve on that? Well, I think the short answer to that is no, but the longer answer is yes. What we believe now is that this Monster hybrid is ready for commercialization, and our plans right now are to ramp up production of the Monster hybrid as quickly as possible. And this, what that means in practical terms, is increasing the numbers of Monster hybrids as quickly and as rapidly as we possibly can in order to get the Monster hybrids actually into full-scale commercial production. That's in large part one of the reasons why we are acquiring private lab space, because the university, as wonderful as it's been in terms of doing this research and development, and I can't say enough good things about the scientists at the university, the university is not set up for increasing laboratory production of the material. They're set up beautifully for doing the transgenic work, but they're not set up for increasing production. And so with the creation of this new hybrid, and with confirmation that it has properties which we believe are very commercially viable, we want to ramp up production of that silkworm just as rapidly as we possibly can. Now, we don't think any zinc finger or other modifications to that silkworm is necessary at all for it to be very commercially viable. On the other hand, we are going to continue to use the zinc fingers to tweak and modify our transgenics. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point in the latter part of 2011, we don't begin to focus zinc fingers on the Monster hybrid strain.
Okay, well, you know, the next question, you really touched upon it. I'll go ahead and ask it anyway, but if there's anything else you'd like to add, feel free. And the question was going to be, is the Monster hybrid ready for production?
Yes, we believe that it is. And we are working right now to ramp up production as quickly as possible.
Okay. What is the status of the peer review, and does the addition of the zinc finger technology alter the peer review process, or will the use of the zinc finger technology be an additional peer-reviewed article?
Okay. So for this question, I think is referring to whether or not Craig Labs would draft some type of scientific publication to be peer-reviewed and submitted to a scientific journal about the breakthrough that we announced jointly with the University of Notre Dame in September. Such an article would describe methods very precisely of what was done and how it was done and describe in scientific terms exactly what was achieved. And I know that there are a number of people who are very excited and interested to see such an article. Frankly, the creation of such an article has never been of a high priority from the company's perspective, but we are working collaboratively with universities. There were scientists at University of Notre Dame and scientists at University of Wyoming involved in this project. And when you work with universities, it is understood that they have a right to publish. And, of course, these scientists deserve the credit and the accolades for their hard work. There's no doubt about that. And they have prepared such an article. They have drafted an article, and my understanding is that it has been submitted for publication to a prestigious scientific publication. I don't have any further information beyond that, but but the scientists have prepared that article, and I'm sure that it will be well received, and they absolutely deserve, you know, all the credit and the accolades for what they've achieved. The creation of this transgenic silkworm and the new biomaterials that they've created are just, you know, just fabulous. And, you know, the scientific community would like to see exactly how they achieved it when no one else could. I think it's only fair that we, you know, at this point share that with the scientific community, and so the world can build on, you know, can stand on their shoulders and achieve even greater things. In the meantime, we've hit the gas pedal on our little race car, and it's spinning around the track.
Good. Why would you open a private laboratory and terminate your Notre Dame relationship?
Good question. We wouldn't do that. We intend to, our present intention is to continue to work with the University of Notre Dame. Our collaborative research with the university technically expired a couple of months ago, but yeah, I just received a draft of a new collaborative research agreement from the university on my desk on this week, which we're looking at closely, and certainly we anticipate that we'll be entering into a new collaborative research agreement with the University of Notre Dame. They've been great to work with, and the move into the private lab is not, as we see it right now, a pushing away from Notre Dame at all. It's an expansion of our own abilities, taking on some additional capabilities internal to us, which I think is only fitting at this point in our growth. Up until now, we've been a very small company, and we still are. We're still a small company, but we're not quite as small as we were back in September and October and November. We put on just a little bit of muscle since then, and it's time for us to take on that expansion. But the most immediate impetus for it really is our desire to ramp up production quickly. We're not just an R&D company anymore. We're now a company with a product, and we need to work on getting that product into the marketplace as quickly as possible.
Okay. Does using the zinc finger technology require the addition of more scientists to your staff?
No, it doesn't. In fact, frankly, it's going to free up time because instead of, you know, having to fire, you know, thousands of darts, you know, genetic sequences, we can now do it with smaller numbers and achieve more. So it's actually it's not going to require less people, but it's going to mean that the scientists that have been doing these microinjections are going to have more time to do other things on the project, including creating more types of transgenics. In the past, it was do 3 months of microinjections and hope to get the right transgenic. That failed, do another 3 months of microinjections to hope to get the transgenic. And if that failed, you do another 3 months of microinjections, hope to get the transgenic, and then hopefully you got your transgenic. Now, our expectation is this is going to happen at a much faster pace. Those first three months could be spent not trying to get a transgenic, but maybe trying to get several different specifically targeted transgenics, each using potentially different genetic sequences. And the expectation is at the end of the 3 months, you've got them. So I don't think the technology is foolproof. We can still make mistakes, and we could have a batch. You know, there's no guarantee that the microinjections we'll do next week will garner us the desired transgenic, but there's a very high probability of it.
Okay. Do you remain the biggest shareholder?
I'm proud to say that I do.
Okay. Please explain the Calm Seas financing arrangement and how it has impacted the company.
Okay. Well, that's you caught me by surprise with that one, Ben. Calm Seas is the group that's been providing our financing, and they've been doing that pursuant to an S-1 registration statement, which we filed about a year ago. And it's essentially, how to describe this agreement. Essentially, in that agreement, CalmC committed to providing Craig Labs up to $1 million in financing. And I say up to $1 million because the terms of it are that Craig Labs gets to decide whether, when, and if we take the money. Essentially, we can put a put to CalmC's and say to CalmC's under the terms of the agreement, we need additional cash. You're now obligated under the terms of our agreement to provide us with that cash. And in exchange, they would receive stock under the terms of the S-1 registration. And frankly, and as many of you already know, this business of finance with small cap companies is a tricky business, and there are a lot of bad players in this space. And now, having worked with CalmC's for about a year, I can say that and as far as I know, they've always honored every part of their bargain with us. They've acted honorably. And in my opinion, they are interested and committed to the long-term success at Craig Labs. I haven't seen any indication that they're short-term players one bit. In fact, CalmC's came to us recently and told us that, as we moved into commercialization, they would be interested in increasing the size of their financing, and they've offered us they've offered to increase the dollar amounts by another $1.5 million, and I have that proposal on my desk right now. I'd say that there's the agreement there is, I'd say, in the final stages of negotiation, and I would anticipate that when we sign that deal, we'll file another S-1 registration or an amendment to the S-1 that'll be up to the securities attorneys to decide. But I would say that that's in the latter part of happening. And I'd say I'm very happy to be working with them. I get calls almost every day from money people offering Craig Labs money. And maybe some of them are on this call, and they can tell you that we can be very difficult to deal with because the money always comes with strings attached, and it always has the potential for diluting shareholders. And, one question that I ask in everything that we do, every contract we negotiate or talk about, I ask, will Craig's shareholders be better off after we sign this deal than they were before? No one has offered us, no one has come to us with a deal that we felt, gee, I got it. We need to do that deal right now. In terms of finance, CalmC's, frankly, has been, as far as I'm aware, they've been completely honorable and forthright with us, and I frankly think that they believe in the company, and they're in it for the. My own belief is that they're in it for the long haul with us, I'm glad that we've got them. I would not want to be in a position where I had to, accept one of the deals that comes across my desk every day, for selling stock to people at at steep discounts and with warrants attached and provisions that if there were a downturn in the market, could really be disadvantageous to Craig shareholders. I think our shareholders expect more of the company than that. They expect us to have a long-term view, just as our shareholders have a long-term view, and not to, mortgage our future for, a few tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars. I may have gone beyond the scope of the question here, I think the impact of the CalmC's financing has been good for Craig Labs. It's given us some stability, and the nature of the relationship is such that Craig controls it. We don't have to send a put to CalmC's if we don't want to. And as our shareholders know, I am I'm rather tight with a nickel, and I keep our corporate bank accounts pretty lean. We don't request more money under the terms of the S-1 than I think we really need. We keep it lean, and we try to keep our dilution to a minimum.
Okay, well, I'm going to follow that question up with two real brief, almost yes or no type of questions. I know you may stretch it out, but do you anticipate adding corporate staff members?
Possibly. Frankly, the company's growing to the point where it's harder for me to do all the multitasking. And as some people on this call will know, it's taking, when I get an email, it's taking longer and longer for me to reply. So I am seriously weighing that the possibility of adding some staff.
Okay. Do you have plans to move the company to a bigger exchange, let's say the NASDAQ or Amex, or even the AIM in London, so we can get some European or at least United Kingdom exposure?
I still think it's a bit premature, although I am hearing very good things about AIM. But naturally, when we embarked on this journey, I believe that if we did everything right, we would create shareholder value, and that a move to a bigger board would at some point be an option. As you know, Ben, I never, even though our stock trades for a few pennies a share, we've never run this company like a penny stock company. We've run it, frankly, like we thought we were a New York Stock Exchange company. That's kind of the mindset that I have. My view has been that we would start out with that mindset even when we were very, very small, and eventually we would grow into it and make that a reality. I'm still hopeful that we're on track for that.
Okay, now I'm going to finish up with three questions, and they're kind of variations on what I would say was the most common theme that I received, and that is the commercialization itself. So let me start out with, what is your best estimate as to a commercialization schedule or timeline?
Okay, so on commercialization on schedule, there's two on I'm afraid we're using up too much time here. There's two major areas of commercialization, essentially, in my mind, woven and non-woven. Woven products, and we're talking about Generation 1 materials woven into textiles, I think that we're going to see the first we're going to see the first woven textiles in commercial channels sometime in 2012. That's my best estimate. Non-wovens are materials that are not woven into textiles, and for a number of reasons having to do with our production ramp up, there's a potential to commercialize non-wovens at a much faster rate. It's possible that we could have some non-woven sales in 2011.
Have you received indications of interest from prospective partners to bring it commercial?
In short, yes. Right now, Generation 1 material is being tested by a company that's involved in what we might call structural integrity and protection, and they're testing the material to see if it can be integrated into their product line. I'm very excited about that. It's a non-woven application, and if that works out, that's something that could happen near term. And then in terms of the woven products, we are, I would say, in very early stage discussions with a manufacturer, marketer, and distributor on creating a possible joint venture. And I want to emphasize that these are very early stage discussions. But essentially what we're looking at, and I'm looking at this as a model really for commercialization, is entering into a joint venture with the manufacturer and distributor so that Craig Labs isn't just a supplier. We're not just supplying raw material and receiving some premium because of the unique properties of the material from the end product manufacturer. What we're interested in doing, frankly, because of the unique nature of our product, is in sharing in the value-added production and sharing in revenues at the manufacturing and at distribution levels. And there's a couple of ways to do that, but joint venture operations is something that we're looking very seriously at, and we're in discussions exploring that with at least one manufacturer right now.
All right. And does Craig Biocraft Laboratories move forward as it's currently structured, or do you believe there'll be spinoffs or mergers and acquisitions involved?
Let me back up before I answer that question, Ben. I just want to, because we were talking about the joint venture, I wanted to, it kind of popped something in my mind. We are moving very rapidly in terms of trying to bring this Generation 1 technology into commercialization. I mean, just to illustrate, we have received a number of requests for woven product samples for testing from companies, and we've received offers to weave the recombinant silk into textiles for testing. And that's really one of the biggest reasons for our moving towards leasing this private commercial laboratory in order to significantly increase our laboratory production so that we can be in a position to have these textiles woven and expand into those commercial channels. And that's, and I think that the joint venture strategy is really a good way to go. Back up to your question, you asked me about spinoffs and M&A. I've always believed that an M&A strategy made sense given the nature of our product and our desire to quickly ramp up production. So we're very open to that, and frankly, we are currently looking for potential deals. But at the same time we're looking at M&A, we are also aggressively looking for partners on the production and manufacturing side, and we are very open to exploring joint venture possibilities with such companies.
Okay. Kim, do you have anything to add, or care to make any type of closing statement?
The only thing I've got down here in my notes is to say thank you to the Craig shareholders. As I said earlier, we've never viewed ourselves as a penny stock. We've always tried to act like we were a big board stock and conform ourselves to those kinds of standards. And it's taken unique breed of shareholder to understand that and to understand why this company isn't doing things the way, you know, other small cap companies are doing. Now as we move forward into commercialization of our Generation 1 product, and even as we accelerate our development of biomaterials, our future has never looked brighter. I do feel that we're being rewarded for having stuck to our business plan, not deviating from it, except where we felt it paid to be a little bit fleet of foot. And I think that that's becoming clearer to all of us as we see this company starting to move further and further around the track. So I just want to say thank you to Craig shareholders. We're in this for the long term, and have a good night.
Thank you, Tim. Again, I would like to thank everybody for joining us, and I hope that you guys have a great weekend.